Welcome to the Advance Your Art podcast, where we talk about the journey from artist to entrepreneur and everything in between. You've worked hard to hone your craft. Now take it to the next level with tips, techniques, strategies, and routines used by successful artists to grow their businesses and careers. Now, let's get started and have some fun with your host, Yuri Cataldo.
How are you today?
I'm great, Yuri. Thanks for having me.
Of course. Thank you so much for coming on. I really appreciate it.
It's my pleasure. Happy to be here.
I'd like to start off by asking, how do you describe yourself and what you do?
How do I describe myself? Well, I'm going to start with what I do because it's easier. So I'm a business and PR strategist for artists and creative entrepreneurs. I'm the founder of The Artist Entrepreneur, and I'm also the leader of the Artist Entrepreneur Network, which is a free Facebook community where I invite artists and creatives to come learn, share, and network about their art, business, and their creative ventures. So I lead that Facebook group, and I'm also the founder of my own consulting and coaching business for artists. How I describe myself? Wow, there's so much to say. I'm French Canadian. I'm a mother of two. And I make jokes that mostly only I get, but that's okay. My clients and the people on my group, they're starting to get to know me and they get my humor. I'm a very strategic person. That's really my specialty when I work with artists and creatives. My goal is to empower them and help them have that strategic mindset so that they can build businesses, creative businesses that fulfill them, not only financially, but personally as well. Because when you're an entrepreneur, it takes a huge part of your life. So you can't do it just for money. It has to be fun and you need to feel that you're growing personally as well. So I try to bring these two together every day.
Great. As somebody who has built a business, I can tell you, you're right. It is, there is parts of it where they're absolutely awful and lonely, and so to be able to guide people to find those great moments, that's fantastic.
That's what I try to do.
What did you study in college?
In college, actually, I studied communications and corporate PR. I, at the end of high school here in Quebec, we have this 2-year program that's between high school and university that's called CEGEP. Only Quebec in the world has that. And I was studying art history and I really wanted to continue art history in university. But my teacher told me, I want to speak to you as if you were my daughter. Please, please, please don't go in the arts. You'll never make a living. And that was an arts teacher, right? So I came from a very modest family who had struggled financially since I could remember. So it really hit home when this teacher told me that. And I was like, no, I didn't want to go through what my family had gone through. So I said, okay, no, I'm not going to go study my passion. I'm not going to go study art history. I'm going to go study marketing and communications and PR. It's going to guarantee but there's no such thing as a job security these days. But at the time, I thought it would guarantee me a future. So it wasn't a love affair. It was more of a reasons thing. Yeah.
So thinking back to that moment when that professor told you that, do you have any idea of maybe why she suggested that you not go down the arts? I'm just curious because
it was a he. He told me that he had been working, you know, he said, well, the only way you can make a living is by being a teacher. Mm-hmm. And I've been a teacher here for 15 years. I still don't have my tenure. I still don't know from year to year if I'm going to have work. Mm-hmm. So it was really about the job security part, right. I think, that he wanted me to find something that I wouldn't be struggling to make ends meet and always be paycheck to paycheck and wondering when the next paycheck's going to come from, which today, working with artists for now almost 10 years, is a reality. Like, I understand where he was coming from, and I'm guessing, you know, we're all humans. We have good days, bad days, and probably when I had this conversation with him, maybe he had been through a rough patch, you know, and he was like, no, don't do that. You have so much promise. So I can understand where he was coming from. And I think that's what motivated me most to do what I do today, to just stop that wheel, right, of artists that are struggling.
Mm-hmm. After high school and before you went to college, you mm-hmm. worked for some larger corporations in PR and marketing?
Well, actually, the day before I graduated from college, I got hired by a very big brand, multinational brand, which you probably know, which is now called Molson Coors.
Yes.
You probably know Molson Coors. So mm-hmm. I started there as a PR on a contract basis, but then I got hired as a permanent PR manager, and I worked there for 3 years. Mm-hmm. And then I started getting calls from headhunters, and I switched jobs, and I worked for the largest t-shirt manufacturer in the world, which gave me the opportunity to travel around the world, do a lot of corporate communications, marketing, working with stakeholders. So I worked with two really big brands in the first 5 to 6 years of my career. Mm-hmm. I climbed the corporate ladder very, very quickly. It was very demanding, very stressful. I was never home. I learned so much working with mentors and traveling and seeing how other companies do it, because I was working with, since I was the biggest t-shirt manufacturers, I was in meetings with businesses like Gap and Nike and Levi's, and really seeing how they were handling also their marketing and their communication. So I really had a chance to see how it's done in the big leagues. Mm-hmm. So it was a huge opportunity for me, and something that I still use today. But the truth is, I hated it. I really, really didn't enjoy my job. The corporate world just wasn't for me. And I was always seen as, like, I was always like the person who was a little different, who was bringing something really different to the table, a more creative side, Catherine's going to bring a new angle here, right? So, mm-hmm. so I didn't fit in the mold, which is fine because it gave me an edge and it gave me the opportunity to bring other ideas to the table. But after, I think it was 6 years, I was just like, okay, this is enough. This is not what I was meant to do. This is not what I want to be doing for the next 30 years. Mm-hmm. So that's when I really had a big one-to-one with myself and was like, okay, so what is it that you want to do? And there was something unfinished there, right, that I hadn't done my studies in art history, and I still wanted to build that knowledge base. So that's when I decided to move to Paris and study art history and the business of art at Christie's. That was really a moment that was a big shift, because left my job, sold the condo, left friends, left family, and just went there by myself and really spent the whole year immersing myself in the arts and the art business. Mm-hmm.
So that's a dramatic change, and one that I think that's like that secret dream that a lot of people have, where they're like, you know what, I'm just going to sell everything and move across the world and study art in Paris. I would want to do that. I'm curious, because you worked for these huge multinational corporate brands, you probably were making very good money. Was it, I guess, and probably if you probably just described this over the years, but is there, was it the fact that, like, just the money wasn't making you happy? Were the people not making you happy? Because I know a lot of people who believe that, you know what, if I get far enough along and I make enough money, it's not going to matter because the money will make me happy.
Yeah, that's what I thought too, actually. And it's true to a certain point. So because I was doing very well, and like I said, I was climbing the corporate ladder very quickly, I was getting promotions on a regular basis. So when I was getting a promotion, there was a pay raise with it. Mm-hmm. So there was like this little adrenaline rush, right? But so then you're like, oh yeah, I can do this. I can figure it out. You know, like I can tough this out. But it only lasts a certain amount of time, right? It's not something that you can, well, for me, like everybody's different, but mm-hmm. for me, like after 2 months, like this feeling of what am I doing here? Why am I doing this? Kept coming back and to a point where I was like, okay, this is, I won't be, and I was working like a crazy person. I was never home. So who cared about the money? Like, I couldn't spend it. I couldn't, I wasn't enjoying the money. I didn't have time to see my friends. I didn't have a partner at the time. I was very lonely. Like I was traveling all the time. And when I wasn't traveling, I was working or I was trying to sleep. Like it was just like, so it wasn't, so the money is great. And also I think the other thing, at that point, I was 26 years old. Okay. So I was only 26. And it was so much easier for me at the time to say, well, you know what? Like 5 years ago, 6 years ago, I was living with $8,000 a year. And I don't have like, so what, why is it that I can't go back to it? Like I don't have a family. I don't have, like, I don't have to start planning for my kids' education. I don't have to, like, the only money pressure that I have is one that I'm putting on myself, mm-hmm. right? It's not, so that was my mindset. Like I need, if I want to do this, like I'm going to do it now because later on, I'm not saying that it's impossible because I see a ton of people doing it, but I can acknowledge how much more difficult it is when you have, you know, your kids in school and your mortgage and 2 cars and a lawn to mow and everything else, you know? So I thought, you know what? I don't, and what really made me decide was I was picturing myself with my family 10 years down the line. Mm-hmm. And I was like, I'm going to be miserable and I'm going to, what am I going to teach my kids, right? That you're meant to wake up every morning and go do something you hate. Yeah. Like, is that what I want to teach them? Not really. Do I want to be resentful at that age of the choices I've made? No. And that's really what my thought process was. And that's what led me to make that decision.
Okay. So then you pack up your bags and you go study mm-hmm. in Christie's. Is that the Christie's, the auction house Christie's?
Yes. So it's the auction house. They have also a portion that is a school and it's a very hands-on type of teaching. So we had teachers from all areas, all walks of life in the art business and the art sectors that came to teach us. We visited galleries, met with gallery owners, visited international art fairs. Of course, really having the opportunity to understand how the auction house market works. So it was a really good opportunity to meet, connect, and get an understanding of how the art market works because it's a really different industry than any other industry that exists. It's a very, very different. A lot of people don't know how the art market works. It's a very opaque segment, let's just say. So it was very interesting to be part of and getting to know how it all works from, you know, behind the scenes.
Mm-hmm. And how long was the program?
It was a full year. I spent a full year there. Okay. It was an amazing opportunity, not just the class itself, but also because I did internships in art galleries there. And because in Europe, it's great because you're always just like an hour away from another amazing city by either train or plane. Mm-hmm. So I really had the opportunity to visit, go, you know, really see the best museums and really see what the art market is like throughout Europe. Mm-hmm.
So after you graduated then, what did you get into afterward?
So after I graduated, I came back to Canada. I wanted to come back here, so I came back here. And while I was there, I had already started networking with people in Montreal, let them know what I was doing on the art market, and letting them know that I'd be interested in connecting when I would be back. Mm-hmm. So I'd already started building my network. So when I came back, I started just going around and meeting more people. And I had my eye on a very good art gallery in Montreal that represents artists in international art fairs. So I had my eye on that gallery. So I just started getting to know people who gravitate around that gallery, and finally were able to meet the owner, and I got a job there. So I worked there for a year. That's when also I started doing some consulting work for artists. And really that's where my artist entrepreneur journey started. Because something happened at the time, and it's 2008, right? So 2008 happened, and two things made the artist situation change a lot that year. First, the economic downturn. A lot of art galleries started closing, or the ones that survived, like the one I was working at, well, they saw a dramatic loss in sales. Like we could see it just by the number of people that were crossing the door. Like there were just not as many people coming in the door. The sales were dropping. So for artists, that was a serious problem. So they needed to start looking at, new streams of income. Mm-hmm. And then on the other hand, social media. Right? Web 2.0 started to really take, you know, it was just exploding in 2008, right? So, but right. Not just because it was starting to be seen as not just, oh, I have my Facebook page and my Facebook friends, but people were seeing this opportunity to use it as a tool to build their brand. So because at first when it started, it was just like, oh, this is fun. I can connect with my friends. But pretty quickly, people started to pick up on, whoa, there's, you know, more than just connecting with friends on here. Like I can connect with the world and I can really build an image and a brand for myself. So, and that's when really artists started coming to me, because in the art gallery, I was doing really well. I was selling well, and I didn't have any problem talking about money and art, mm-hmm. which is usually a very taboo subject in the arts, talking about selling, talking about making money, celebrating wins, like making a high five with an artist because you sold one of their piece. Like that was really like, oh, wow. Okay. Like we can openly talk about these things with her and, you know, work together to make that sale. And I was really, including the artists in the process of making the sales, in the sales cycle. So that's when artists started coming to me and asking me, advice, you know, on what they should do. And because most artists at the time, they didn't even have a website, right? Because they relied solely on the gallery. The gallery did it all for them. All they had to do is create the work, ship it to the gallery, and the gallery would take care of the rest. So, but now it wasn't that wasn't working anymore. So the galleries expected more from the artists. The artists needed to do more to differentiate themselves and get that sale, build an online brand, and also look at other streams of income because the galleries were struggling. So that's really when I started working with artists one-on-one, seeing what their needs were, and understanding that there was really a gap. Really a gap for them in terms of understanding how business works, how branding works, how marketing works, a gap in terms of strategy, in terms of execution, and in terms of mindset. And that today is what I do. So, but that entrepreneurial journey had its ups and its downs. So I did go work for an NGO for a few years also, needing to have a day job. And this NGO was like a really great opportunity for me to just grow on the digital marketing side. So I really understood, like, it made me learn a lot more because there was like a big shift there in digital marketing around 2009, 2010. So understanding how blogging works, how selling online works, how email marketing works. So that was something that I was able to bring to the table. And after I had my second child, when I had my daughter, that's really when I launched the Artist Entrepreneur really in the more full time, just doing that and supporting artists. And that's what I do today.
Mm-hmm. It seems like your journey then from what you were doing in the art galleries to what you're doing now came about a bit organically. Were there particular books you were reading at the time or mentors you reached out to that helped you structure your business that you have now?
Well, of course, like the gallery owner that I work for is still a huge mentor for me. I still meet with him, and you know, just have conversations to really get to make sure that I'm up to date what's going on in the art market. I'm still very, I travel to go at art fairs, international art fairs. So I want to stay on top of what's going on in the art world. I did read books, but mostly it's really the feedback that I got from artists. Okay. That's really, and you're right, it really grew organically, through the feedback and really listening to what artists were telling me, what they were struggling with, and realizing by just speaking to them and giving them my support that what I had to say, they needed to hear it. And they would tell me, they were like, yes, thank you. Like, you've just explained this to me so simply, and now I understand what I need to do. And when, you know, 10 minutes ago, I was confused and I had no idea how to do it. So that's really because I had the background. I know how to do these things, and it's just bringing it to artists so that, because the art market is different, because creatives see things differently, it's just, I'm able to bring that background, that knowledge, but translate it, if you will, in a way that makes it helps artists grow their business, but also in a way that they feel good about.
Mm-hmm. Oh, definitely. You're right. I've noticed also in just my own experience that there's lots of information out there about growing businesses and companies, but someone with more of an artistic background thinks differently, and so what you do is absolutely amazing. The fact that you're able to translate it in a way and put it in terms that actually make sense for somebody who thinks a little more creatively and less, you know, like bottom line.
Yeah. And also not to be afraid to think bottom line, because sometimes what we don't know scares us. Mm-hmm. And thinking that, well, what if I think about my bottom line? What if I start thinking about budget, but I still don't make money, right? And then that's scary. So I rather not look at it. I rather not think about it. That way, if it doesn't happen, I won't be disappointed, right? So I hear that, like, I don't hear it in those words, but that's what's being said to me, right? And I think that it's not by hiding from money or hiding, looking at your numbers, that you're helping yourself, right? You're setting yourself up basically to just not get any result. Like if you don't plan, if you don't set goals, how can you ever feel that you're moving forward? So it's just also like getting really clear on what your expectations are and what actions you're going to take to reach them, and not being afraid to have setbacks and get back up and try again.
In your opinion, why do you think that money conversation is so hard for many artists?
Well, I think it has to do, I don't want to, no, I should be careful here. well, I mean, first, I think there's something that is like in our collective, it's not just artists, it's our society in general that like puts artists in this box of that, you know, starving artist kind of image, which was great in like 1910 in Paris Montparnasse, right? That was like so romantic, and you know, they were poor and they, okay, they, you know, they had this lifestyle, and it's fine, but things have evolved, things have changed. And, you know, I think it serves a purpose for some people. So they perpetrate that myth that it's okay. Like that's what artists are and will always be. And it's very difficult for artists who want to move beyond that, to do so, because, usually they are not supported. People around them don't believe that it's possible, so they don't encourage them. They rather encourage them to find a real job. And I speak to artists who've been through art school, and they're basically told, you know, you have two options leaving here. Either you teach or you find a job at Best Buy. But it's basically what they are told. And because you can't expect to be discovered by, you know, a New York gallery anymore and have, you know, and just go and have your next 30 years that you're represented by that gallery and you'll be fine. Like that doesn't happen anymore. So it's just like, well, yeah, so you have two choices. Either you teach. And I have a client who she was doing her master's, and at some point she went to see her professor and said, I need to ask this, like, how is this going to work? Like, how is this going to work? And he said, what do you mean? And it's like, well, how am I going to make a living with this? And that's basically what he told her, right? You're going to teach or you're going to work at Best Buy or whatever, McDonald's. And she's like, no, that's not going to work. And what she did is that she went and educated herself in personal finances. Mm-hmm. And now she has two careers, right? She has her artist career, and she also has this personal finance blog, and she helps artists get really good in their personal finances, because like this is something that really, that's what's perpetrated in art school. And that's also why some people won't go to art school, because it's like, what's the point, right? I'm going to be in debt. I'm going to get out of there in debt. And then how am I going to pay? Not only am I going to pay my bills, but I'm going to have to pay my debt, right? So get it. I'm not going to art school. So that happens too. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. And I know from my own personal experience of going through a couple of different art schools, For the theater side, I studied painting originally and then got into theater. But it was the exact same type of experience where all my professors in undergrad, they were full-time professors, and they also designed across the country. And then I got into the Yale School of Drama, where all my professors are professional Broadway designers. But they're also all late in their career. So, of course, jobs are easy for them. But when I would ask the heads of my programs, okay, so this is wonderful that I'm you know, learning all this, and I'm seeing a little bit of change happening in the economy. What do I do to make money? And the only advice I ever received, which was from the head of Yale School of Drama, and he said, don't worry about it, Yuri. You're going to get an agent, and your agent will take care of it for you.
Yeah. Yeah.
Which is absolutely terrible advice because that's, that actually never happened.
No, exactly. It rarely happens. And today, it's not enough. So even if you do get the agent or you do get the representation from a gallery, a gallery will show your work every 18 months, every other year. It's not enough. It's not enough to make a living, right? So you're absolutely right. It's and that's why I always regularly tell artists that it's also your job as artists to make sure that society values art, mm-hmm. right? Like, if you don't do it, who's going to do it for you? Like, you have to be the first advocates of, so when I see artists that think that lowering the price of their artwork will make them sell more, they think they're not selling because their prices are too high. I'm like, what are you trying to tell us when you're lowering your prices? What do you think you're telling people about the arts in general, right? So it's important to all artists to be ambassadors of the arts and try to be positive and really share what the importance and the value that it brings to a healthy society, right? So there's no healthy society if there are no arts there. So it's really part of an artist's job to break that cycle. I believe, like, we're the first people to have to do this. We can't expect, like, athletes will be very loud about the importance of, you know, sports and well-being and investing in kids' education and sports, right? They'll be very loud. They'll be very present. And artists need to do the same thing about the arts.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I definitely, you're right. There's athletes do, and maybe it's just because they have, I don't know if it's they have a bigger platform because a lot of them are on TV a lot, or...
but how did that happen, Yuri? How did that happen that society started to put value on someone that can throw a basketball? And I have nothing against sports, okay? Like it's not, I'm not trying to say that one is better than the other, but we're all responsible, like, for the society that we live in, right? And what is valued. So I don't want to sound too, like, woohoo and whatever, but it starts from us, right? So if us artists don't value our work, how can we expect others to do so? Mm-hmm. That's really the first question that we need to ask ourselves.
Mm-hmm. So when you work with your clients, then how do you go into this exact problem? So, you know, you've definitely hit on something very, very important in that a lot of artists particularly, and it may be for their own, you know, they may have it's a personal thing or for whatever reason, are a little bit shy on the sales and marketing side and are even valuing themselves. Mm-hmm. How do you have them approach that problem?
Well, it's usually very different from one person to the other. Trying to first understand, like, where that block is coming from, right? What is it that, where is this stigma, right? Is it because, is there a gap in terms of, knowledge or training? Is it because they just don't know how to do it? And they're intimidated by it. So then we can work together and I can empower them with tools. Is it a mindset thing? Do they feel that it's wrong to sell? Do they feel bad when selling? So why do they feel that way? So it's important to understand where this is coming from. And usually I like to start by asking, how do you feel when someone is trying to sell you something? Because if you feel always like on the defensive when somebody is trying to bring value to you by trying to sell you something and you're always offended by it, of course you're going to be uncomfortable selling, right? Mm-hmm. So it's getting, you know, comfortable with being sold to. So not because somebody is trying to sell you something that you have to buy it, right? You're kind of your own person. You have the choice. You can decide, right? Mm-hmm. So you shouldn't judge someone for trying. So of course there are better tactics than others to sell. And that's fine. You can learn from people that you don't like their ways of selling and say, I don't like being sold that way. So I want to do things differently. I think the best way to do things differently is to approach sales as building relationships. That's really how I see it. It's about building relationships. I didn't invent this. People buy from people they like, know, and trust. And the only way you can get people to like, to know, like, and trust you is to build those relationships. So that's how I try to approach sales. That's how I approach it in my business. And I think that's how, if artists do it that way, they'll feel much more comfortable, especially when it comes to art, because art is all about experience. It's all about connection, emotional connection, seeing something, having that moment when you feel that you absolutely want to be in contact with that piece over and over again in your home. And I've seen it firsthand, like buyers will be much more likely to make that buying decision if they have a connection with the artist. Mm-hmm. That's without a doubt. Like when I was selling at international art fairs, we would represent, a handful of artists, and some artists would invest in a trip to come with us and be with us at the booth and meet with collectors and buyers. And I can tell you these artists got a real good return on their investment because they did much better than the ones that weren't present, because the collectors could really talk to them, understand their creative process, and really connect with what the artist was trying to accomplish, right? And and then the work just like sold so much. It made my job much easier, actually.
Interesting. Yeah. So in a way, is it that the buyers are basically not necessarily buying the artist, but investing in the artist because they know and trust them?
I think, well, there are different types of buyers. There are different types of scale, when you're buying, so I'm not going to go into buying art as an investment, because this is really like a very small top tier. And personally, I think that you should buy art because you want that piece and you want to connect with that piece every day, not because it can give you a return on investment, because usually if the return on investment will be for your kids, so not for you. Right. And that's if you really have an eye, and you have to have a really big collection for some of those pieces to really last through time. Mm-hmm. But yes, absolutely. Buyers are investing in an artist. So if you don't have a good personal brand, and I'm not talking about being like all salesy and marketing and polished, but I mean, if people don't understand who you are, what you're doing, why you're doing it, what you stand for, they're not going to buy from you. It's a big investment, and it's, there's so many other things that come on our expenses list before art, right? Mm-hmm. Let's be honest. It's usually a luxury item. So when people decide to invest in that luxury item, they want to invest in a piece that they feel good about, but also that they're supporting someone who they feel has promise and will grow as an artist. Because as you grow as an artist, your work will take value, and then the piece that the person buys will have more value as well.
Mm-hmm. With the artists, doing this, I'm sure a part of this comes from fear, in a certain extent, of like fear of putting yourself out there, fear of being rejected, just even fear of starting their own business and selling art. How do you guide the clients you work with to get over their own fears.
Yeah, you are so right. Like, fears come up all the time, and I see it in my group program. I see it with my one-on-one clients that, you know, they're working towards a goal, and we work towards a goal together. And then when they reach that goal, like, oh my God, like, it's so scary because now they have to move, like, to the next level. And then it's just like, oh wow, like, be careful what you wish for kind of thing, right? Because now it's like, oh, now this works. So I actually have to do this, right? I have to actually have, like, I actually got into this gallery. So now I have to create a body of work, or I actually pitched my story to an outlet, and now I actually have to give an interview or things like that, right? So, I mean, there's no magical recipe, and it's always one person is always like, everybody's different. But what I find is journaling about it helps a lot. Finding, you know, a community, finding a place where you, because it gets really, really lonely, being an artist. And although most artists will tell you that that's what they want, I see a huge shift when, I see them really getting involved in a community, right? When they don't feel that they are alone, when they can get feedback, when they can get support. There's really a shift there. So really, like, journaling about your fears and journaling about what it could look like if you didn't have those fears, joining a community, and of course, having people, trusted people that you can go to for support and advice when you are afraid, and people that will demystify it for you, because, you know, there's a the fear is not real, right? It's not real. Like, it's just, fear is something that it's in our mind. It's something that, you know, our mind was created to just have thoughts and thoughts and thoughts, and those are like just things that we tell ourselves, and we tell ourselves so much that we start to believe them. So we just need to reframe what and just get it all out there and journal about it and be open and super honest about those fears. And when we start really putting words into them, then we realize that this is all BS. Like, this is just like, this is something that someone have told me that it was never going to work. And what was the point? And I should be doing something more with my life because it's never going to work. And then I'm afraid of disappointing people. I'm afraid of disappointing myself. I'm afraid of them actually being right. But the truth is, like, being an entrepreneur, whether it's artists, creatives, anyone, it's not a linear process. Like, it's not going to go. And there's really something that needs to be said about, like, this on, like, the internet is wonderful and it can help you in so many ways, but it can also destroy you, because what you see and the images of, like, what success is, that's not what reality is. Like, building a business is messy. There's ups, there's downs, there's disappointments, there's failures. And it's the ones who pick themselves up and continue that actually make it.
Oh, definitely. It comes to mind, this quote, I don't know who said it, but it was the idea of, don't believe everything you think, because our minds are trained to constantly keep looking for things. And sometimes we, you know, get caught up in the minutiae of everything.
And I often tell my clients, like, you only control two things, what you think and what you do. Mm-hmm. That's all. Like, the outcome, you don't control it. So you just have to trust that what you're thinking and what you're doing is at the best of your abilities right now, and learn from the outcome. You need to learn, because, again, like, people who keep failing and failing and keep doing the same thing over and over, like, then you need to ask yourself, well, I've been doing this for 10 years. It's not working. Okay, maybe it's time to try something else. Maybe you think you don't need a community or you don't need a mentor, but what's the downside of trying, right? What's the downside of trying something different and seeing how that works out for you?
Mm-hmm. Definitely. I also like that you brought up the idea that not everything we see on the internet is actually real, and that I was chatting with, I forgot who it was, a few weeks ago, Instagrammer who, has a huge following, and, most of what they put up are curated, and it's not real. It's hundreds of photos they take, and there are, teams of people who go through it and curate it, and it's not what their real life is. It's manufactured.
Exactly. And I get that all the time, how is it that this artist or this celebrity or this person, this influencer has 100,000 followers and I can't even ramp up to 200, right? Mm-hmm. And I'm just okay, there's technical reasons of how social media has changed. And probably if you had got into Instagram 3 years ago, you'd be way ahead. So there's mm-hmm. technical challenges that are happening now. That's one thing. But the other thing is, these people are spending how many hours a day, like you said, taking hundreds of pictures, cropping them, fixing them, glossing them up, creating that perfect caption. Well, wouldn't you rather be in your studio creating your art? That's something also that you need to ask yourself, what are your priorities? And I see a lot of artists who think they need to do so many, they need to do it all, and then they get frustrated because they're not creating and they're not getting results because they're just trying to do it all. But at the end of the day, they're doing nothing. Nothing is being accomplished. They're just trying to do a little bit of this and a little bit of that. And then it's like they feel they've been working on all these things for 6 months, 2 years, and nothing has really taken off.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. There's definitely a huge advantage to focusing on what your strengths are and picking an avenue and sticking with it.
Mm-hmm.
Because you're right, it's very easy to get distracted, especially now you're like, well, I need to be on Twitter, I need to be on Instagram, I need a YouTube, and then I need to be on Snapchat. And then, if you're not good at any of those, then you're just sending out this kind of mediocre content on one versus the other. And then what happens if, what happened with Vine, there are these, people who got very famous on Vine, and now that platform is gone.
Yes.
So now what do they do?
Absolutely. Absolutely. So I remember when I started the Artist Entrepreneur Network, the Facebook group, I was chatting with an artist on the group who is doing all of his marketing on Facebook. And I was challenging him to diversify because I told him, you don't own Facebook, buddy. So mm-hmm. all these contacts that you're building, all these relationships, you're dependent on someone else's platform. And he dismissed my recommendations and he was doing quite well. And I was happy for him, but I was just saying to him, you need to think in a way that's sustainable. And recently I saw he had a really powerful Facebook group where he would promote his work. And recently I saw a post of his where he shut down his Facebook group because of the Facebook algorithm. And the time that he was investing on his group wasn't giving him an ROI anymore. And he was inviting people to switch to his email list. And I couldn't help but it didn't make me happy. It didn't make me happy. I don't want to be right. I'm not just yay, I was right. I was upset because since the algorithm doesn't allow him to reach people, what do you think happened to the post that he wrote and told people to go on his email list? It didn't reach half of his group, not even a quarter of his group. So he lost a huge opportunity there, right? So really building, like you said, like what happened with Vine, building on someone else's platform, you need to leverage those platforms to your advantage, but you can't have that as the foundation of your business because you don't own it. And you like when people started doing petitions when Instagram installed the algorithm, mm-hmm. as if Instagram cares about your petition. Like, don't spend time writing a petition about to Instagram. They don't care. Yeah. Spend that time building another strategy. like that's the mindset that you need to have, right? Like, okay, what's my next move? And ideally, you want to be 2-3 steps ahead of that curve when you plan your next move. Mm-hmm.
So if you were to encounter an artist just starting off, mm-hmm. what advice would you give them that would help them through the big hurdles that they're about to encounter?
Well, the first, so many things. First, don't think that, so I wrote a blog recently and it's, don't think you'll get a medal for this. So don't think you'll get a medal for doing it all alone. Okay. So there's nobody's going to give you a trophy at the end of your career because yeah, you did it and you did it all by yourself. And that's what something we were trained for when we were five. Like I have a 5-year-old and there's so much reinforcement on everything he's able to do by himself. Right. Mm-hmm. So that's something we're trained all our early years that, yeah, you got it. You did it by yourself. But no, when you're building a business, there's no pride in doing it all by yourself. Right. So set up a support system. That's the first thing. The second thing is go out there, meet people, show your work, get feedback. Like, because that's how you're going to figure out what your market is, like who's interested in buying, what they're interested in, right? So you need to talk to people. If you're just creating work in your studio and you're just posting pictures on the internet, like, that's not how you build relationships. That's not how you get feedback. So you need to show your work. You need to get out there and get as many people to see it so that you can start identifying who you're creating this work for, right? And who's going to give you that satisfaction by wanting to see more of it, wanting to invest in it. And that's not going to happen if you're not really, and you're not trying. And the third thing I would say is don't be afraid of failing. Like everybody fails. And yes, there will be places you're going to show your work and it's not going to sell. And it's okay. It's not, everybody goes through that. And it's not even a failure. It's just something that you can learn and then build and say, okay, well, no, I tried this. This is not for me. What worked here was this. What didn't work was that. And now my next move, I'm going to reiterate. I'm going to pivot. I'm going to reiterate. I'm going to try something else. And just not doing anything because you don't think it's going to work is not going to, because you're waiting for that big gig, right? So I hear that a lot. People say, well, isn't doing this going to stop me from getting into a gallery? Or, well, are you getting calls from a gallery right now? Like, are you going to spend your whole time just like, so in case a gallery calls you, like a gallery will not just appear in your life. Like if you're not visible, if you're not out there, if you're not meeting with people, if your name's not circulating, they're not going to guess that you're creating masterpieces in your studio. So you just need to get really clear on what your end game is and then build your brand and build your marketing in a way that's aligned with what your end game is. But it's not going to be linear. And sometimes you're going to try things that are not going to work. And it's totally fine.
I'm curious, in your own business and what you've done over the years, are there routines that you've developed that help you get the most productivity out of your day, or are there certain programs or techniques that you have?
Yeah, well, yes and no. So I try to have a routine and I can share it with you. I'm a really good, one of my strengths is strategic planning. And I don't like to talk about time management because I think time, you can't manage time. You can only manage your tasks. Mm-hmm. But But I also have a 3 and a 5-year-old, so flexibility is something that I have had to learn to work with, because sometimes all the time my schedule changes and I have other obligations. Like I also teach a college class, for creative entrepreneurs. So like I have multiple things that are going on in my life that I need to juggle. I would say that first I try to have my morning routine. So morning routine includes meditation, journaling, and chamomile. So that's kind of my morning routine when I'm able to do it. I won't pretend that I do it every morning, but I try to do it. And journaling includes really like what my day is going to look like, a little bit of gratitude practice. And also if I'm going through shifts in my business, just journaling about it and seeing what is coming up with me and the business. The other thing is I've really over the past year tried to, and it's funny because I had a conversation yesterday. I was at the college where I teach and we were talking, but about multitasking. You know, there's like kind of this sense of pride around multitasking. Like, yeah, I multitask, right? And I really, everybody looked at me at the table very weirdly when I said, oh, well, I'm trying to quit multitasking. And they looked at me like, what, is she crazy? Like, what do you mean? Like, we're all like pumping ourselves that we're so like we're multitasking, right? And and it's very unproductive, it's very stressful, and you lose productivity when you multitask. And you know what, being busy, and that's something that I feel comes from the corporate world, because in the corporate world, whether you work or not, really not important. It's if you look, if you're like you're busy, is more important than if what your output is. But when you're an entrepreneur, like who cares if you look busy? It's the output that's important, and what you're putting out there. It's if you're selling, like it's the result that's important. Not who cares, like if you did it with ease or if you did it white knuckling it. Like it's the result that's important. So I try to multitask as little as possible and focus on one milestone a day. And it's a challenge because we all want to do, like, we all have our to-do list and there's so much we want to do in one day. But I've tried to really work with my calendar. I still have a paper calendar, where I really block out times where I'm going to execute, pieces in my business. So instead of putting on lists, there's something I want to do, instead of adding it to my to-do list, I put it into my calendar. I book time to do it. And I move priorities around because prioritizing is key.
I'm so glad you brought that up. You're right. The being productive and being busy are two completely different things. And I know from my own experience working for a couple of corporate businesses, it's the same thing. Like, you know, it didn't matter that it took you 10 minutes to do your job and actually produce something. But as long as you stretch that out and look like you were doing, like you were busy for 6 hours, then everybody left you alone. Because yeah. That's what it looked like.
Yeah, exactly.
That's great. Yeah.
Exactly. There was a commercial like 10 years ago of that they had invented a fake commercial about that fake coffee cup that was steaming. And the guy would leave it on his desk and then... Like in the morning, the boss would come in and said, wow, Jerry was here early. And then in the evening, he would leave. He's like, wow, Jerry's still here. And it was like a running gag, you know, because it was just about how many hours you spent in the office versus the output. But, and that's something that I work a lot with my clients. Like when they ask me questions, like, how should I do this? How should I do that? Yes, I give them support and I give them strategy, but I always tell them like, you realize that this is your business, right? You get to call the shots. Oh, but I've been told I should be doing this. I should be told I should be doing that. Okay. Like, but at the end of the day, it's your name on there. So it's so scary. It's so scary because then if you fail, your name is on that failure, right? We shouldn't fail. We should always get it right from the first start. But, and then I, when people tell me that, like, oh yeah, but what if I fail? I'm like, what would you tell your children, or what would you tell another artist? And say, well, I would tell them that, you know, it's okay to fail. It's okay. Don't worry. You'll get up and you'll try something else. And well, why aren't you telling yourself that? Why aren't you being that gentle with yourself? Right. But it's true. I'm the same way. I'm sure you're the same way. Like, we're not as, soft on ourselves that we would be to someone else, but we need also, and I'm not talking about a building excuse over excuse, but you know, if you genuinely tried something and it didn't work out, it doesn't mean it's the end of your career.
Oh yeah. And you're right. And I'm like this too. There are, it's hard to take your own advice, and it's hard to be nicer to yourself than you are to other people. Because when I speak with others, either, you know, doesn't matter who they are, business executives or even other artists, I try to give them, you know, like, these are practical tips, and if it doesn't work out, then that's great. But to myself, it's like if my internal voice was a person, I would punch them in the face. That's how rude they are sometimes.
Yes.
Like, we say terrible things to ourselves and expect, and it, you know, it's partially, you know, maybe because of the educational system too, because I, you know, growing up, in going to school for years and years and years, I wanted an A. You're like, just somebody tell me how I can get an A. And when you're doing your own business, that's not how it works. Like, there's nobody there saying, well, if you do this and this, then for sure you're going to get this and you'll get that A. And it doesn't always work out like that.
Well, well, to build on that, Yuri, what really frightens me right now is that there are people who tell you that.
Yeah, that's true.
There are people who tell you, like, just follow my easy 7 steps and you'll earn, you know, 6 figures in 60 days. And I'm just like, whoa, like, that's not true. And artists come to me and they're like, well, can't you just give me like the 6 steps? And I'm just like, well, what 6 steps? Like, don't you think that if there were 6 magical steps, we would have heard about them already? Like, you know, and also because if everybody does the same 6 steps, then nobody succeeds. Like, it's just like, it's success on your own terms. It's knowing what you want, because what I want, what Yuri wants, and what Sarah or Pamela or Andrew, it's all very different. And one is not the same. And you need to know what you want, and then, you know, do whatever it takes to get it.
Oh yeah. I mean, if this magic formula existed, we'd all be billionaires with 6-pack abs.
Anyway, if you figure it out, Reed, you know, you have my email, so send it to me, okay?
I definitely will. I'll figure out the billionaire 6-pack ab formula, and I will definitely pass that along.
Great, great.
What would you say is the best advice you've ever received?
Wow. Just maybe picking up on what we just said, I don't know if it's the best one, but you're the only person that can decide what success looks like for you. And that was something I got very recently, like in the past few years, because I had this preconceived idea of what success was. And I was running after something that wasn't my own definition of success, right? So that's why I wasn't happy, because I was following the steps of someone else, like what you should be doing. And that's what success is, right? But that's not reality. We all have to define what success means to us, to feel fulfilled. And it's not about, for some people, it might be 6 figures. For others, it might be 7 figures. For other people, it's maybe watching their children grow up. Other people is having a retrospective at the MoMA. Like, it all depends on what you want. And then you have to be true to it, though. Once you've figured it out, then you have to go for it. It's your responsibility.
When you then hear the word successful, are there particular people or things that come to mind for you?
Yeah, it is. It has evolved over the years. I think it's for me, success, there's an element of just it's more. It's not just about the business. It's about a person in general. It's about, you know, being true to who you are and being true to your values. And growing something, whether it's your business or even if you're in a day job, right? But in a way that that is true to what you want to do. You know, I don't really, I'm not a person who reads like entrepreneur bios or things like that. It's not really my style. A little bit stay away from that because I have a tendency to compare myself, and say like, oh, this person is so ahead of me. And, you know, like, oh, and so, and I think we need to be careful about that is just looking at everyone else and saying, oh, everyone else is so ahead of me and I'm still here. Right. So you need to look at other people as inspiration, but being very aware of where you are right now and knowing that that person wasn't always where they are today, right? They had a starting point and they started maybe with, you know, a lawn mowing business or whatever, and it grew and usually it grows organically and then they hit the big break, right? But so for me, success through the years, like I've realized that it's more something that comes from within than from outside validation, I would say.
Excellent. Well, Catherine, again, thank you so much for chatting with me. I feel like we could probably go on for another few hours. if the listeners would like to hear and see more about what you're working on and get in touch with you, what's the best way to do that?
Well, they can check out my my website, which is theartistentrepreneur.com, or check us out on Facebook. We have an amazing, amazing community of artists from all over the world who join together to learn, network, and share about their creative businesses. And it's called the Artist Entrepreneur Network. Just look for it on Facebook. It's free. And I drop in. I'm in there every day to answer questions, have conversation, challenge people, and offer a bunch of free resources.
Wonderful. Thank you. I will put all of those links in the show notes then.
Great. Thank you, Yuri.
Great. Well, again, thank you so much, Catherine. I really appreciated your time.
Well, it was my pleasure to speak to you and your audience.
Wonderful. Thank you so much. Bye.
Bye.
Thank you for listening to another episode of the Advance Your Art podcast. If you liked this episode, please go into iTunes and give us a 5-star rating. And while you're there, hit the subscribe button so that every single time I release a new episode, it will go directly to you without even thinking about it. If you're interested in hearing older episodes, please go to advanceyourart.com where you can find the catalog of everything I've done so far, as well as contact information and projects I'm working on. Thank you again, and have a great day.